All right, well, something has certainly changed. This gentleman is no more. I got to get me some new cutouts of Keir Starmer. Who else do we got left here? This guy is gone in 2017. Another lame duck, so might as well get out of here. This guy, after tonight's interview on ABC, is just gone. Whether he's going to be gone soon or not, I guess, is another question. And this guy, I don't think he's too far off. He is tethered to the former sinking ship. So that's what we got going on. The two last men standing, and quite possibly the last man standing, go figure, the authoritarian despot, as we've referred to him for the last 3 years, Vladimir Putin, comes out in the finals. Now, Donald J. Trump. There's a lot about Donald J. Trump that a lot of people don't know with respect to nuclear weapons and nuclear weapons treaties. We're going to talk about all of that today. Why, no matter if we go this way or if we go whoever replaces Biden, the coconut tree lady, if we go that way, it's World War III. However, there does appear to have been a marked shift. Have you noticed that? There does appear to be some kind of shift. We're going to break it all down for you today. Now, I want to say that CNN right now is saying that according to top Democratic circles, there's already talk about who is going to be Kamala Harris's running mate. So it's not even about whether or not Joe Biden is going to run. It's about the running mate. Now, the idea after tonight's interview performance, after that horrendous debate performance, that Joe Biden is actually going to be able to do another 4 years is one of the most disingenuous statements a person could ever utter. People are just in denial, okay, if they believe that. Now, you could go out on a limb and say he'll win, okay, but you can never say that he's going to last 4 years. At the rate of deterioration that we've seen, even over the last year, it's just out of the question. So we know what the move is here. You're not hiding it from anybody, even your own mainstream media, who's been gaslighting everybody for the last 4 years, is saying that it's over. So we know that it absolutely is going to be over. I've been gone for a few weeks. I've had some dental issues that I've been trying to work out. On top of that, I'm just incredibly busy. So we have like a week's worth of news to cover and try to put in perspective. And quite frankly, I don't even know where to begin today. If you haven't heard, the United States has now been granted access to 15 of Finland's military bases. Finland shares a border with Russia, an 800 kilometer long border. These 15 military bases, of course, could be used to house U.S. conventional weapons, but also U.S. nuclear weapons. Things have been very quiet on the Black Sea. It makes me think that the Russians did in fact shoot down an RQ-4 Global Hawk drone over the Black Sea recently, because since late June, we haven't seen a lot of activity in that region. So something has definitely changed. But what we know is that if Biden is on his way out, then people are going to start to get desperate. We have 122 days before someone either does something really stupid or capitulates and changes their tactics. We must understand that the big war here is East versus West, United States financial hegemony and euro as well, versus China. Essentially, it all boils down to China. They are the ultimate superpower, far exceeding that of the Russians. The goal is to diminish the rising power, the greatest threat to the transatlantic alliance, and that is China. They've been trying to do that through Russia. Could it be that they've gotten as close as they can without going to nuclear war? Could it be that if they push it any further, it's going to go nuclear? I'm quite amazed by the confidence of Viktor Orban going to talk to Vladimir Putin, especially after the incidents that we've seen with Robert Fico, where he was nearly assassinated Now, they're trying to say that that's a random one-off thing. I don't know. Maybe it was. Maybe it was some sort of intelligence agency psyop. And by that, I mean the guy was kind of like a, what was it called? The MK Ultra type stuff where they mess with people's heads. Maybe it was that. But regardless, Orban is quite confident, it seems. So maybe in spite of all of the naysayers, be they Kaja Kallas, Jens Stoltenberg, and all the people who are trash-talking Orban for going and seeing, going and speaking with Vladimir Putin, maybe they're breathing a quiet sigh of relief over this. Because right now, things are getting down to the wire. The Russians are actually starting to push on every single front. Things are ratcheting up, and I don't have any answers for what is going to transpire. Because right when you think that these guys are starting to relinquish a little bit of power here, they'll come out tomorrow and they'll say, we're going to send Ukraine 1,000-kilometer range missiles. So we just never know what's going to happen. But I'm going to try to break down what I know, and we're going to just try to put the pieces together here, freeform, in an impromptu manner. Now, it's important to understand that Vladimir Putin has explicitly stated that regardless of whether Trump gets into power or not, that it's not going to make much of a difference. Now, he is open to potentially talking about peace, but he's made one thing abundantly clear, that Ukraine, the four regions, are off the table in terms of negotiation, that there is the precondition is that Ukraine must remove all of its troops from the entirety of the four regions. So not just the regions, the part of those regions that the Russians have captured, but all of those regions, from Kherson to Zaporozhye to the Donbass. And what that means is that the Russians still have a long way to go. So if Vladimir Putin is saying that in spite, and Viktor Orban came back today and he said the gap between what Putin wants and what Zelensky wants is as wide as it's ever been. But he also said that, you know, 20 hours or 100 hours of peace negotiations with no result is better than 1 second of a missile fired. So, and on that note, I would have to agree. But when we see this type of aggressive last-ditch diplomacy starting to happen, it either means one of two things. It means that the West is about to capitulate, or it means that this is the last chance, that this is the final chance before we cross that red line, that ultimate red line, which of course is going to be the introduction of the F-16s. Now they're stalling on the F-16s right now. They're starting to say, and you're starting to see this in mainstream media publications, that maybe Ukraine doesn't have the facilities in place in order to defend or in order to use the F-16s, because they need very finely manicured runways and a very delicate infrastructure for them to be leveraged effectively. So what it could possibly mean is that they're going to bring in these 8 Patriot missile batteries, 8 of them, from Israel. Well, they're going to send them to the United States first, and then they're going to get sent to Ukraine, because Israel needs Russia to kind of act as a stabilizing force within Syria. So it's a complicated state of events. But this is perhaps what they're going to bring in first in order to try to protect these planes if they're going to launch from Ukraine. It starts to look like, as my long-standing theory, that they're going to do it from Romania, from Poland, which is why Poland is on a very high state of alert right now, as is all these surrounding countries from Belarus to northern Ukraine. But it's starting to look like perhaps they're trying to get the Patriot batteries in play first. Now, remember, 2 years ago, when they shipped one Patriot missile battery, everybody thought that was the ultimate red line. Some people thought that that was going to be what compelled the Russians to use nuclear weapons. Now they're talking about sending 8, not talking about it. I'm pretty sure it's a done deal at this point. It's just a matter of getting all the paperwork done. So if it's a done deal at this point, it could just be that the whole goal here is to try to get the defensive weaponry in place and then introduce those things to the battlefield. Either way, Vladimir Putin knows that Ukraine is going to try to buy time. And if you think he trusts this guy, think again. Case in point, this is Donald Trump's nuclear track record. For anybody who thinks that it's only Joe Biden bringing us close to World War III, and I know there's some people who cling to this guy religiously, I would say that if you're politically clinging to anybody, that that is anti-constitutional in a way. It's anti-American to have any sort of demigods that you should worship. You should be instrumental in who you vote for. And if you think that Donald Trump is the best candidate to do it at this point in time, who am I to argue that? I mean, I would debate people on certain things, but I wouldn't necessarily, feel that I have to convince you of that. But what I will say is this. Donald Trump's nuclear track record is as follows. He single-handedly withdrew from the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty in 2019. In fact, some people say that that was one of the major factors which caused this guy to go into Ukraine, okay? He got rid of the Iran nuclear agreement. So this, of course, compelled Iran to want to nuclearize more, depending on how you look at it. Some people will say, well, this caused them to go into bankruptcy, or not quite bankruptcy, but it caused a lot of economic problems. But as we've seen, sanctions never work. They never have worked. In fact, they only make a country forced to be more self-sufficient. So sanctions always backfire. He also withdrew from the Open Skies Treaty. The Open Skies Treaty was one in which allowed nations to look via satellite, via airplane, of course, not flying your planes within a country's airspace, but I think it was primarily satellites. You could, surveil to see what was happening. So he backed out of that as well. He also told a Puerto Rican governor that if nuclear war happens, we won't be second in line in pressing the button. Now, that might bring people assurances that perhaps we could limit the outcomes of a nuclear war for our territory. But that also means that there's a higher risk that he'll push the nuclear button first, which of course will compel us, will compel the Russians and the Chinese and whoever else wants to get in on the fun to fire back. So this idea of he's more open to what they call a preemptive strike is problematic, because the Russians hear that. That puts them on a higher state of alert, okay? Last month, Trump's former national security advisor, Robert O'Brien, called on Trump to resume nuclear tests for reliability and safety in the real world for the first time since 1992. The corollary to all of this, of course, is going to be that all other countries, as soon as we start nuclear testing, then it's on. Every other country is going to start testing nuclear weapons and possibly neutron bombs, because there are rumors from some who are in the intelligence community, or the former intelligence community, that Israel is planning on using their new Wunderwaffe, which is the neutron bomb. Now, if you don't know much about neutron bombs, they're similar to hydrogen bombs. They're different in that they don't have as much of an explosive yield and they're more focused on radiation. So they will literally be like a microwave and just cook everything over a wide area while leaving the infrastructure relatively intact, not entirely intact. There's still explosive yield, but somewhat intact. So could this be the weapon that Israel is threatening every other day, it seems? Lieberman, one of the most hardline right-wingers in the Israeli government, in fact, is calling for the use of nuclear weapons against the Iranians, who just today, just an hour or so ago, elected a candidate that runs on a more peaceful, non-nuclear platform. Now, is that just a cover? Is that just a front? Is this just Iran's way of appeasing its population? preventing a revolt. Of course, the Ayatollah has the ultimate say with respect to what Iran does. And Iran is going to play into everything that we're talking about today because, of course, energy and finance, okay? When it comes down to it, it's about money and oil. And we live in a globalized world, so we have to understand how all of this factors in. China, rising superpower, you have BRICS emerging, gold is starting to be hoarded, the American global reserve currency is being called into question, and energy wars are everywhere. Europe needs energy. I would argue still that the United States is going to need energy moving forward for a variety of reasons that are unforeseen at this period of time, but they pertain to artificial intelligence and automation. That takes immense amounts of energy. Internet 3, 4, 5.0 will take immense amounts of energy. So this is all about energy. And contrary to my recent guest, we disagree, that's Doomberg, on the availability and the abundance and the ease of access to oil. Okay, it's not infinite. And if you know it's not infinite, there's a reason why we're in the Middle East. There's a reason why we're in this war with Russia. By and large, it's to deprive our primary adversary, that is China, of what they need the most, what their system runs on, and that is oil. China doesn't have enough oil. Now, as I've said, Donald Trump and the people around him are just as likely to escalate this thing because it's just a matter of where they're going to escalate it. And here's a good way to understand it. Joe Biden, Donald Trump or Joe Biden, they're all on the same team. It's just a matter of where they want to escalate World War III. We know if Donald Trump goes in, gets into office, he's going into the Middle East. He's already committed. He's 100% behind whatever Netanyahu does. There will be no checks and balances. There will be no audits. It's just going to be undeterred. Netanyahu can do whatever he wants, get into wars with Iran. It doesn't matter. Okay? So that is his play. It's the Middle East and probably China as well. But just remember that a lot of these nuclear treaties that were basically backed out of were with Russia. Okay? So this idea that Trump and Putin are just buddy-buddy and it's all good is, I think, a misnomer. Now, Trump is not going to fix the problem with Russia. The Russian ambassador to London, Andrei Kalin, has said that Trump will hardly end the war within 24 hours. During an interview with Sky News, he was asked, will Trump end the war? He insisted that everyone, including Donald Trump, should be realistic about the situation on the ground. He warned that Vladimir Putin is not going to stop his offensive actions should there be any negotiations to the end of the war. We are advancing. It's wrong to think that there is a stalemate over the special military operation area. There is no stalemate, he claims. It should also be known that Donald Trump is talking about Bitcoin as a strategic reserve asset. Not grain, not oil, not ammo, not medicine, but Bitcoin. Vladimir Putin has said today that there should not be a ceasefire or some kind of pause that the Kiev regime could use to recover losses, regroup, and rearm. Russia is in favor of a complete and final end to the conflict, he stressed. Now, I've heard some rumors. I believe it was Kim Iverson, who's an independent media reporter. Let me get a little closer to the camera here. There we go. That's a bit better. It's hard to fit all these guys in the frame and then do the video. She had a theory that Zelensky is being held hostage by the Azov battalion, by the hardline nationalists, who really the only true ideologically driven fighters that are remaining right now. Everybody else is a conscript. You got hundreds of guys trying to flee the country every single day. Now, if you want to cross the border, you have to basically show your military enlistment passport to prove that you've enlisted in the draft. I don't even know how they're balancing out who's essential and who's not, but it would be a good case study to see, because that whole trial run that we had with the pandemic would be somewhat transferable to a World War III situation, because remember who they were classifying as essential services Well, I think that those essential service jobs would likely be the last to be plucked if you needed manpower. So, you know, become a farmer, I guess, because you're always going to need food. Viktor Orban went and visited with Vladimir Putin, as some of you probably know. And, of course, this is allegedly to the dismay of a lot of hardliners in NATO. I think that the reason why Orban went to go and chat with Vladimir Putin is that he knows the writing is on the wall. He knows that Ukraine could potentially fall without NATO support. And there is a issue of Transcarpathia, which historically had a lot of Hungarians in it. Now, I'm not a historical expert on this region, but there's some revanchist theory here that says that maybe Hungary is trying to get in Putin's good books so that they can, at some point, if Russia does go all the way to the western part of Ukraine, maybe, you know, Hungary can take that problem off their hands. So that is one possibility. In spite, or I should say despite of, the apparent waffling on whether or not we should support Ukraine anymore, they're still going to be getting another $40 billion from the EU next year. You still have one of the most Russophobic, aggressive hardliners now being one of the EU's lead diplomats. That's Kaja Kallas. And everybody's still militarizing. Like right now in Estonia, you have the, is it Estonia or is it, I think it's Lithuania actually, the capital there, Vilnius. They are starting to warehouse hedgehogs and anti-tank barricades for when the Russians advance. Okay, so they're actually starting to amass all the defensive fortifications to defend the city. And they're not even at war, but they're already starting to do this. Ultimately, what you're going to have, even if you do have some armistice in some demilitarized zone, the peace dividend is over. The era of the peace dividend is finished. There's a myriad of reasons as to why. It could be the death of the dollar. It could be the lack of cheap and reliable oil. Or it could just be a variety of things. It could just been that this has been percolating for a long time and people are starting to get worried, and now they're just, people are starting to make moves. But one thing is for sure, there is no more peace dividend anymore. Okay, and the peace dividend is just essentially that you, in times of peace, as we've enjoyed over the last 30, 40 years since the Cold War ended, we've been able to spend and invest money in infrastructure projects, in developing trade corridors and things that are constructive. But now that countries are going to war once again, even if they aren't in a current state of war, but there's a concern about war, then more of the disposable revenue is going to be going to building weapons and bombs. And that's going to be money that's going to be taken away from the utopian future that we've all been promised in the movies. Putin has also said that Ukraine doesn't want a ceasefire because the Ukrainian leadership would thus be forced to lift martial law and hold elections. So isn't it funny that all of the leaders who are the primary antagonists from the Russian point of view in all of these conflicts, be it Zelensky, Netanyahu, or Vladimir Putin, or sorry, maybe that was a Freudian slip, or Joe Biden, it wasn't a Freudian slip. I mean, you know, from Vladimir Putin's point of view, Biden is the antagonist here. So from their point of view, though, all of these guys are lame ducks, right? So you have Netanyahu clinging to power, knowing that as soon as the war ends, he's gone. Joe Biden, probably something similar, although his situation is clearly a little bit more different with his medical predisposition. And then you have the Zelensky, who is just clinging to power because, yes, indeed, if they were to have elections, if they were to lift martial law, if they were to have peace, then what's going to happen to him? Okay, is he going to have to flee the country, is the question. According to Kaja Kallas, in Moscow, she was the, I think it was it Estonia or Latvia? or was it Lithuania? She was the prime minister of one of those places. In no way represents, Viktor Orban in no way represents the EU or the EU's positions. He is exploiting the EU presidency position to sow confusion. The EU is united, clearly behind Ukraine and against Russian aggression. Margus Tsakana has said that no words to express my disappointment and disapproval of Orban's plan to meet with Putin. So these are all EU politicians, okay? Le Pen, Marine Le Pen, who is looking like she's going to win the prime minister seat in France, but may not win a majority. The other guy, Macron, will still be in until 2027, but again, he'll be a lame duck as well. She has claimed, and again, this is just a claim because these guys tend to turn on a dime. Okay, they always say whatever they have to get elected. The same thing with Melania. That as soon as a representative of a political force heads the government, she will prohibit Ukraine from using French long-range weapons for strikes on Russian territory. There's even talk of potentially leaving NATO. Erdogan is saying that the West, in fact, does war. He does want war. He's the Turkish leader. Certain Western powers appear hell-bent on turning the Ukraine conflict into an all-out world war, President Erdogan has said. He added he hoped that peace would prevail. So you have Vučić saying that a big war is coming. You have Orban saying that a war is coming. And Erdogan, all these guys who are kind of on the fence and not these crazy NATO hardliners, they're all saying that the West wants a war. So again, I go back to my initial hypothesis that people are going to be getting desperate as the days to the next election count down. If you actually are truly, you know, of the belief that it is the only, that this is a unilateral decision to support the Ukrainians and that Trump is going to significantly change that in any way, I don't necessarily think it is. I think that it's bluster as well, because even Trump's conditions for remaining in NATO have mostly been met by European countries in terms of spending, or at least the intermarium countries, the old Soviet Warsaw Pact countries. They're all meeting or vastly exceeding their proportion of GDP that they're expected to commit for military spending. So even on paper, you know, it looks very unlikely that Trump is going to back out of this war. And I think once he gets in there and he starts having that conversation with Vladimir Putin, if that happens, then, you know, we're quickly going to find out, you know, what the actual outcome is going to be. And it could actually go quite badly. You know, it could go well, but it's only going to go well if we make concessions, because neither Ukraine nor Vladimir Putin is saying that they want to make concessions. Now, interestingly, Tucker Carlson is going to be interviewing Zelensky as well. So that's a promising sign that in the very least, we're going to get a temporary slowdown. But again, it doesn't matter. There's no more peace dividend, right? Even Bulgaria is proposing a peace summit. On the flip side of that, though, you still have YouTube blocking various Russian artists, people who are in sports. And it makes you wonder, like, at this late stage in the game, you know, why are they doing this if we're starting to hear these rumblings of peace talks? Is this a top-down order? It's hard to say. So there's just a lot of conflicting information in terms of what we can expect to see. We're at a crossroads right now, and it's a transitional period for so many Western countries who are having elections, even Iran. So I think we're going to see in the next couple weeks which direction this goes in and where everybody truly stands. The Russians also did a scheduled exercise of their nuclear ICBM Yars missiles today. That's becoming incredibly commonplace and not even really worth talking about anymore because it's happening so often. You have Russian P-800 Onyx missiles could possibly be heading to the Red Sea with the Houthis. That is one horizontal means of escalation that the Russians are threatening. In terms of Russia now kickstarting their intermediate range nuclear missile production, that is going to be in play. And of course, it's interesting because Vladimir Putin, when he was addressing a press conference, he said in the same breath that he welcomes Donald Trump's openness to trying to negotiate and mediate this issue. However, that they're also going to be looking at starting up production of these intermediate range nuclear weapons. And that, of course, was a reference to the fact that it was Trump who bowed out of that. Okay? Black Sea issue, as I said, we haven't seen a lot of Black Sea activity lately with United States recon planes. Now, this could be because that phone call, that highest level phone call between Lloyd Austin and his Russian counterpart in the Ministry of Defense there, that could have been the final red line. That could have been Russia saying, we're going to use a tactical nuke if you fly this plane here anymore. Or at the time of making this video, they could be flying another one there right now. There's a lot of unknowns, but one thing they did say, and one thing I think they're going to explore, is not shooting them down, but finding different ways that they can bring them down without shooting them down. Because the Russians don't want those kind of optics. So if anything, they're going to try to create turbulent flows and vortices around the plane by flying their fighter jets in and around these things. But I think these drones fly a lot higher, so it's a little bit more difficult to just dump fuel on them. They could potentially be using electronic warfare, bring one down via cyber attack. I'm sure there's a lot of possibilities. Just a random ADHD factoid, Jeff Bezos is offloading $5 billion worth of Amazon stock. So yes, we are currently at a peak of the markets, peak S&P, peak NASDAQ. But you know what else is peaking? Gold. The price of gold is peaking. And I'm wondering if the price of gold is peaking because indeed the Russians have won. If it's true that the Russians have won and the West is backing down, gold is going to continue to skyrocket. And that is because the U.S. dollar will become weak. It'll get weaker and weaker. And interestingly, you heard Jerome Powell just the other day, for the first time, I think, in a long time, actually address the issue of the growing debt, talking about how maybe it's going to be a problem that we're accruing, what is it, $1 trillion in debt every, 3 months, and then $1.7 trillion in interest payments every year is where they're heading, on top of the $36 trillion that they're already in debt. So he's starting to talk about it, and there's also been rumors that there's going to be interest rates cuts this year as well. So that could be what's triggering this. Now, it's been so long since I haven't done a video. This is probably old news to people by now. But Belarus is currently mobilizing forces on the northern border with Ukraine. And Lukashenko, in a speech that he was giving the other day, and in attendance to that speech was the Bulasov, the new Minister of Defense of the Russian military. He gave Lukashenko a standing ovation when Lukashenko effectively stated that they have no red lines, that as soon as anybody attacks them, they have their Iskander missile nuclear tip complexes loaded up, ready to fire, and that they will use them without hesitation. The increased activity of Ukrainian armed forces in the border areas of Ukraine in the north, as well as the transfer of militants of the Russian Volunteer Corps, have prompted Belarusian troops to get ready the Iskander-M missile systems that are nuclear tipped, given by the Russians, and border guards and special operations forces have been transferred to an enhanced duty regiment. So they're saying that the presence of these special forces on the border with Ukraine mean that Kiev is preparing to transfer sabotage groups to Belarusian territory. This is according to the chief of the general staff of the armed forces of Belarus. According to this assessment, the number of Group North is 115,000 people. That's how many guys they have, of which 15,000 are concentrated directly on the Ukrainian-Belarusian border, he said. So things could potentially heat up there as well. A lot of reconnaissance activity to complement all of that. It's been so long since I made a video that I probably didn't talk about the fact that the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant was also hit, and this time there were casualties. 8 casualties, to be in fact. Russian nuclear power plant workers injured in a Ukrainian attack. This was just days after a radiation detection station at that nuclear plant was destroyed. So the governor of that region, Rogozin, who was the former head of the Roscosmos space program in Russia, which also oversees a lot of Russia's nuclear capabilities, their ICBMs, rocketry, he basically has now called for Zaporizhzhia to be wiped off the map in terms of the Ukrainian forces, signaling that the Russians are going to go all the way in that direction as well. There's rumors, and these are just rumors, that Ukraine is going to be moving the capital of Kiev, if things get really bad, all the way to Lvov in the west. According to Vladimir Putin, the reason why he is not going to agree to a ceasefire until Ukraine agrees to give up the 4 territories is because, according to him, when they were outside of Kiev in the early part of 2022, when they were dug in with the self-propelled artillery, you know, they had it all set up right around the city there, and you had those iconic shots of the Ukrainian troops on the bridges, guarding the bridges of Kiev, and all the barricades in place. He said that they could have went into Kiev, they were ready to go in, but because of this deal that was being brokered, which of course was derailed by Boris Johnson at the time, now we're on the 4th prime minister since that time, isn't that insane, that they could have went into Kiev and done it in 2 weeks. So that's why they're not backing down anymore. That's what they say, not me. Don't shoot the messenger. Estonia is confident that it will be able to hold off the Russian army for 2 weeks in the event of a direct conflict. A whole 2 weeks. Just long enough, they claim, for the 5,000 German troops to get there, I guess. But they're genuinely concerned that the Russians are going to continue with their expansionist strategy, even though the Russians are claiming that they have no imperialist ambitions, that they simply want NATO off of their doorstep, but now they have it with Finland, that has now opened their legs to the U.S. military-industrial complex to place nuclear weapons just a few miles away from one of Russia's largest cities, St. Petersburg, which is home to 5 million people. You're going to have potentially U.S. weapons and nuclear deployment systems first, right on the border of St. Petersburg. 1 month before Ukraine defaults on their debt. According to the British magazine, The Economist, Ukraine has only 1 month left to try to reach an agreement with its creditors. Otherwise, the country will face default. I'm not sure if anything's been brokered in the last 24 hours. There were talks that it would be, but there's another problem with Ukraine as well. They're going to run out of energy. In fact, if it gets too hot there, they're going to have more blackouts because people are going to be using more air conditioning. That's the only way you can survive in high-rise building in plus 30 temperatures is if you have air conditioning. And that's going to cause a drastic economic slowdown. But more importantly, come wintertime, their grid has been, for the most part, destroyed. I'm not sure of the exact figure. I presume it's in the 50 to 80% of their energy infrastructure has been destroyed. They've now backed out of the gas transit deal. So does that mean they're going to blow up the pipelines that run through the country now that they're not charging those fees to have that gas pass through? There's a lot of things in play here. But one thing to consider, the insanity of this, the insanity of lending Ukraine money, knowing that in order for them to pay you back, they would have to win the war. Now, what would it actually mean for Ukraine to win the war? Well, Vladimir Putin has made it abundantly clear that if Ukraine wins and expels them from the 4 regions with the help of the West, then it's going to mean nuclear Armageddon. So these bankers are banking on nuclear Armageddon. And you know, this got me thinking about something I said probably a year or so ago with respect to what money is. Money is war bonds. All money are war bonds because it's really more of a measure of how capable your country is of defending itself. For example, you have the US dollar, which is one of the most sought after currencies in the world. The most sought after currency in the world. Why is that? Well, it's because they won the war and they're still barely winning the war. People want to put their money in places that they think are most secure when it comes to the ability to transact. All money is war bonds. Ukraine, in buying or in borrowing money, is essentially selling war bonds. They're saying that we are going to win this war and that there is going to be profits to be made off winning the war. There's going to be the spoils of war, which in their case will be retaining what they already have. But it's just an interesting concept to think about war bonds as currency. Anyways, I digress. Iran now has a new anti-nuclear weapons president. But again, that's just on the surface. And the presidential power in Iran is limited by the theocracy there, of course, the Ayatollah. Many people suspect it was, in fact, the Ayatollah, and I have Iranian friends who believe that it was the Iranian government who actually shot down their own plane or their own helicopter and killed that guy, okay? The former president, Raisi. And why they did that, I don't know. But this could all just be a play by the Iranian government to not only appease their own population to prevent a Mossad or CIA-backed uprising or to limit the possibility of that, or it could be a way to try to smooth things over with the West. You bring in a candidate who's not a hardline nuclear guy, at least on the surface, but we know that the Ayatollah has said that if the situation arises that they need nuclear weapons to preserve their existence, that they will pursue them. Even though within the religious edicts of Islam, it is taboo to have nuclear weapons. But they will do it, they claim. Top Hezbollah commander was killed. In the last week, there's been hundreds of rockets fired. In fact, just yesterday was one of the most aggressive days for activity on the northern border. In spite of all the threats, though, we haven't seen the major escalation yet, and that's because they're waiting for U.S. warships to get there in the eastern Mediterranean before they make their move, and they may, in fact, be waiting for some sort of ceasefire deal to materialize in the Gaza Strip. However, if that happens, then Netanyahu's on the chopping block. If he gets the hostages back, maybe that'll buy him a few weeks with people, but people will still be out there protesting in the streets. He knows his time is limited. He knows he could potentially be going to jail. I don't know if you get presidential immunity there, how that works. It could be. But if they decide to pivot to the north, which every indication signals that they're going to, then, of course, that's going to be a perpetual war. And all that's going to do is just start the war with Hamas in the West Bank once again and bring Syria, bring Iraq, and invariably it's going to bring Iran into that issue as well. And then you have Yemen as well, who's going to continue to bombard Israeli ports and Israeli ships. But according to the leader of Hezbollah, if there is a ceasefire in Gaza, we will stop shooting missiles into Israel without hesitation. Now, sorry about that long break, just thinking about something. Think about all the work I have to do when I get home this weekend. Okay, so there's a concern that Israel, in an act of desperation, they're really starting to threaten the use of non-conventional weapons. And there are talks that they may, in fact, use these neutron bombs if pushed, because there doesn't seem to be a way in which they can win a conventional war against Hezbollah, especially if the entire region flares up. Now, they are preparing the hospitals. They are moving critical intensive care units people who are in intensive care, they're moving them out of there to the southern regions of the country. It appears that they're getting ready for it. I don't think they have the manpower for it, but who am I to say? But at this point in time, judging on how they've fared with Hamas, you would think that by this point in time, they would have turned over every inch of that territory and they would know exactly where those hostages are. And maybe they do, and maybe they're just not letting on that they know where they are because for fear that the hostages could be harmed in some way. But either way, it still does seem like things are escalating, even though oil has ticked down a little bit marginally in the last day or so, while gold continues to go up and Bitcoin crashes. 40,000 fighters have arrived in Syria. Afghani and Iranian fighters arrive in Syria to join the potential war against Israel. 40,000 Shiite militias, militants are currently in Syria. You'll have to forgive me today, guys. I'm still having problems with my neck and just general soreness of my jaw as a result of this dental issue I had recently. Trying to keep it together the best I can. I think that's all we got to talk about today. There's a lot of other stuff going on, like space warfare and things of that nature, but that's the gist of it. So again, right now we're at a crossroads. This is a transitional period. In the next couple weeks, I'm sensing that there is some sort of pivot that has happened here, but it's very difficult to see. Let's keep our fingers crossed, because if it's true that World War III is called off, which realistically it hasn't been, then that's cause for celebration and we can all breathe a sigh of relief. But what that's going to mean is that just means that it's temporarily postponed, because we know that the same thing that caused it in the first place will present itself again. Either way, the peace dividend is over. And countries are going to start militarizing on a scale that we've never before seen in our lifetimes, at least my lifetime. So that is an opportunity to prep, if that is the case. But quite frankly, that's being way too optimistic on the basis of a failed attempt to mediate the crisis between Russia and Ukraine. And that's exactly what happened with Orban. Nonetheless, it was a step. And we have to take what we can get at this point. Would encourage you guys to go and check out the interview we just did with Doomberg, as well as the other content we've released in the past week with respect to how to build a post-collapse garden, how to build a synoptic food forest, as it's called, where you can have a system of plants that complement one another. It's a type of permaculture, and we show you how to do it step by step, really easy to do. I know it's probably going to bore most of you guys out there who just want the bad news. I get it, though. You want to stay informed, and we condense it and aggregate it in a way which is to the point, and that's what I try to do here. I don't like rambling on about stuff. If I do ramble on, I want it to be incisive analysis that you can, that at least gives you something to think about. So I hope that's what we're bringing to you on this channel. Anyways, gotta go do some work on the farm. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe. Canadian Prepper out.